Can I change the clock on this? This is really driving me nuts. There's no clock.
You know,
I don't have a back pedal. Oh, I know. Sorry about that. Senate, come to order, please. Messages from the House.
From the House of Representatives, January 18, 2017. Mr. President, the following bills passed the House on third reading in an amended form by the votes indicated. Message number 114, House Bill 3, Cease and Transfer Priority List, ayes 58, excused 2. Message number 118, House Bill 51, Borrowing Authority for the Department of Transportation, ayes 48, noes 10, excused 2. The following bills passed the House on third reading. Message number 113, House Bill 2, Storage Tanks, ayes 58, excused 2. Message 115, House Bill 9, Student Ownership and Privacy Rights, ayes 58, excused 2. Message 116, House Bill 14, Insurance Code Amendments, ayes 56, noes 2, excused 2. Message number 117, House Bill 83, Healthcare Facility Licensing, Bed Count Limit Exemption, ayes 58, excused 2. Signed by Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
Reports from Standing Committee. Committees.
January 18, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 48, Farm Loan Program Amendments, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman. January 18, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Is that what he just read in? Senator Hicks, do you have a re-referral?
Yeah. Mr. President, Mr. Vice President, I believe that's Farm Loan, Senate File 48, would like to re-refer that.
No, I think, does that have, do they both have appropriations?
What's the number on that?
I think it's 56, maybe the Omnibus Water Bill. Is that what you're referring?
All right. Mr. Vice President, I would ask a re-referral for Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Planning. And also, Mr. President, Vice President.
To committee number 2, appropriations.
To appropriations.
Without objection, so moved.
You have to state the sponsor, too.
It should be Select Water, but
what was the
name? I know, I'm waiting for him.
Yes, 48.
You have it.
All right. Mr. Vice President, I'd like to re-refer Senate File 56, Omnibus Water Bill Planning, to your committee number 2, sponsored by the Select Water Committee, to the Appropriations Committee, your committee number 2.
Thank you. Without objection, so moved.
Chaired by the
Board.
I'm sorry.
Yeah. Mr.
Vice President. Yes. Yes. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Vice President, I would also ask for a re-referral of Senate File Number 48, Farm Loan Programs Amendments, to your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, sponsored by by Senator Emmerich.
Without objection, so moved. Any other referrals? No. Consideration of bills and general file. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, we are at that order of business. Consideration of bills on general file.
Mr. Vice President,
I move the committee of the whole re-resolve itself back into committee of the whole. That's W-H-O-L-E, not H-O-L-E. Thank you.
Okay, now that we've grammatically and spelled it correctly, you've all heard the motion. All in favor, aye?
Aye.
Opposed? That was a little more enthusiastic than this morning. Senator Moniz.
The Committee of the Whole will come back into order. The first bill for consideration is Senate File 23, and the reading clerk will read the Senate file.
Senate File 23, Fuel Tax Appeals, an act relating to the State Board of Equalization, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Case, Ellis, Kinski, and Peterson. Excused, Senator Wasserberger. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a favorable consideration of Senate File 23, Fuel Tax Appeals. And for further clarification and explanation on this good bill, I would defer to the good Senator, Senator Kinski.
Senator Kinski.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a simple bill. I know what you're thinking, simple bills for simple senators. I just will get it out there.
Question.
Mike, is the mic not working?
The mic is
How's
off.
That? There you go. Senate File 23 is a fix-it bill which gives people who have a assessment on a fuel tax that they wish to beef the right to appeal, which does not currently exist in state law. So to walk you through the bill and give you an orientation, I would direct your attention to 6 pages of paper that I had distributed this morning. It says on the top, Senate File 23, in a very neat hand, I might add, Senate File 23, Fuel Tax Appeals. And it's 6 pages, and I'm taking something of a risk here. My dad always told me, never give anybody more than 3 pages. Less than 3 looks like it's not enough. More than 3, they get confused. But in light of the collective intelligence of this body, I've doubled down and given 6 pages. So let us say that you have a business and you get a property tax audit and you believe it to be incorrect. So you go to your local attorney and your attorney says, well, you're in luck. 39-11-109, a Wyoming statute, the first page says, you have the right to appeal, subsection B. Or if you have a sales tax audit and they determine a deficiency and you want to appeal that, you go to your local attorney, says you're in luck again. The same language that was there in the property tax appeals is there for the sales tax appeals. We've got a remedy. As is true in most every other tax except 3, the fuel taxes. So you get a fuel tax assessment and you want to beef it, and you go to your local attorney, and the local attorney turns and looks at what is now page 2 to you, and says, well, we got a problem under 39-17-109, subsection B, under appeals, it says there are no specific applicable provisions for appeals for this article. That's fuel excise tax. The next page has identical language for diesel excise tax. And the page after that, the last page, has the same language for alternative fuel excise tax. So the way it's operated historically is the Department of Revenue says, or the Department of Transportation says, well, we try to work with them. We try to work something out. We bootstrap ourselves into using the administrative hearing office, but it'd be a lot cleaner if this language was explicitly in the statute for Board of Equalization as with any other tax appeal. So that is the purpose of this bill. So referring now to the bill, page 2, you'll see the first change, wherein 3911102, Administration of the Board of Equalization, we are adding in language that says the Board shall also review final decisions of the Department of Transportation concerning the assessment or application of taxes authorized under this title upon application of any interested person adversely affected. So that gives jurisdiction to the Board of Equalization to hear these excise tax appeals, something that does not exist currently. Then under 3917109, Taxpayer Remedies, this section is under the fuel excise tax. And what it does is removes, the repealer sections remove the language which currently says there are no specific applicable provisions for appeals, and inserts instead the very same appeal language that is contained in all the other tax appeal sections of the code. On page 3, the same thing is true. 3917209 is the diesel fuel excise tax. The repealer removes the sentence that says you have no right of appeal, and this bill inserts the exact same appeal language as in all other code sections of the code regarding tax appeals. And page 5, the same set process for 3917309, taxpayer remedies. This is for alternative fuel excise tax. Again, it simply removes the section of code that says you don't have a right of appeal and inserts the same language as there is for appeal of all other taxes to the Board of Equalization. And with that, I would ask for your favorable consideration, and I stand for questions.
Are there any questions? If not, is there a call for the question?
Question.
Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that to do so with a favorable consideration for Senate File 23, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 23 has passed the Senate, passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next file for consideration is Senate File 54. The reading clerk will read the file.
Senate File 54, Military Spouse Hiring Preference, an act relating to military affairs, sponsored by the Transportation Committee. It was referred to Committee Number 8, which returned back a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Anderson, Baldwin, Christensen, and Meyer, Senator Meyer, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Senator Meyer.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the mic on? Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise to report, it do so with a do pass motion on Senate File 54. There was a standing committee amendment, and I would ask that the reading clerk read that amendment in at this time.
Senate File 54, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 2, after line 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm going to go through the bill, kind of tell you what it does. As you see, the title is Military Spouse Hiring Preference. This was an interim committee bill. It was brought forth after some concerns that the good senator from Converse County brought up, and we had a lot of testimony during the interim on this particular bill as far as what was occurring in different communities across the state as far as some different types of discrimination and things happening on military spouses. So essentially the language that you see on page 2, that's the same type of language and definitions that we have in the other National Guard preference bills. The amendment actually just reshuffles the deck chairs by taking Romanet 3 and moving it up to Romanet 1 and relettering. Essentially, that's what it does for the bill. Nothing new as far as substance. Going on into the second part of A on page 3, again, that's another area there where you have the public department and public works. There'll be an amendment on public works on committee of the whole. We're looking at a military spouse. We go into the amendment in that particular instance. Mr. Chairman, we haven't moved that amendment, so I would move that amendment at this time, Mr. Chairman.
Okay.
So the amendment is Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 54. I'd ask that be moved. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So if we look at this, we turn this into an interview rather than an employment preference, and we do that in all of these different areas in each of A, B, and C. And so in those areas there, that it's an interview in A, and then we define in B that we strike competitor and say a candidate not otherwise eligible for hiring preferences, and the same language in C, a candidate not otherwise eligible for hiring preferences. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd ask that we call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment. If there are no questions, otherwise I stand for any discussion on the amendment.
Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Call for the question, Mr. Chairman.
Question being called Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 on Senate File 54. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, this is not the differences between this one and the other preference things we have. We don't have any specific preference for handicapped, the 10% preference. We just leave a 5% preference for spouses. Certainly amenable to discussion or amendment at a later time period if people want to discuss whether or not it's appropriate to add the handicap 10% preference. As this bill stands, it's just a 5% preference. And again, it's only in the interview process. So, and it also says on page 4 that there's no hiring preference given if the military spouse is currently employed by a public department. And again, this is essentially for the initial one. It's not for promotions. So we don't have any problems with these guys getting second bites of the apple, so to speak, if they we just want them to try to get their foot in the door. Same situation as we had with the National Guard. The good senator from Converse County may wish to add to this if there's some further debate, but I would sit down and call for questions if anybody has questions on the bill itself. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Meyer, would you want to move your committee of the whole amendment at this time, or would you like to
wait? Mr. Chairman, I can. That goes into two parts of that Committee of the Whole Amendment. Mr. Chairman, I would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 54.
Okay, we're going
to... And ask the reading clerk read it in for us.
Thank you.
And then I'll remove it.
Senate File 54, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 2, line 23.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move the Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 54. We do two things in there. Line 7... of the amendment, that's page 3, line 4, is purely grammatical, brought to us by staff. The other part of it is substantive. The discussion that we had on this is that we wanted this to apply to only to public entities. And when we looked at the definition of public works, and public works definition I'll get that. It says, means all fixed works constructed for public use, whether or not done under public supervision or direction, or paid for wholly or in part out of public funds or assessment of property owners or right users. So we felt that was too broad, that it could be construed in this statute, although we pulled this from a 1910 statute on preferences. We felt it could be construed in this statute to give a preference in the interview process for military spouses to the that contractors would have to comply with, or other people would have to comply with if they are working for the state or for a political subdivision on public projects. So what this does is narrow the bill down to essentially public employees and takes the private sector out of the bill. And with that explanation, I'd stand for questions, if not call for the question. On the amendment.
Senator Burns, did you have a question? On the amendment. Question being called on the on amendment, Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 54. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
Yeah. And, Mr. Chairman, I'll take my seat and either ask questions, or if there's anyone else that has some.
Senator Burns.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman.
Yes. I did not. Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 54 has passed.
Mr. Chairman, by my reading of this bill, I again don't see anything, any preference given as far as a Wyoming military spouse. So the way I read this, a military spouse down in Florida, Georgia, anywhere like that, would get a 5% preference over any person, any other non-military person in the state of Wyoming applying for a Wyoming job, be it a state job or a municipal job. Is that the case?
Senator Boner.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That would be a correct reading of the bill, but I'd caution the gentleman from Sheridan County that the ways in which this will be fundamentally different, they do have to be married to either an active duty service member or a guard member. They'd have to be living in Wyoming in order to, unless they want to make a significant commute between their where their families live and where they'd be working here in the state of Wyoming. There's just a little bit slightly different elements at play here. With they'd have to be almost certainly married to a military spouse or a military member within the state. So I think that just given the nature of this piece of legislation compared to another one, that concern should be by and large remedied through that. Just had the fact that it'd have to be married to an active duty member or a guard member.
Senator Burns.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I didn't anticipate the idea of somebody commuting from Georgia and back and forth, but I do can very easily see the idea of the person who's in the military being posted overseas, so it doesn't matter if the spouse is in Georgia, Wyoming, or anywhere else. But the fact is they would get the job or get the interview for the job in front of a Wyoming resident. Actually, much more likely is somebody who might be in the military and their spouse lives in northern Colorado and can commute across the border and take jobs and have a 5% preference in front of a Wyoming resident for that interview. We could very easily end up with a number of Wyoming state employees or Cheyenne municipal employees who are actually residents of Colorado.
Okay.
Senator Meyer.
Thank you. Let's look at the military spouse definition here. It says, means a spouse of a military service member as defined in paragraph Romanette I, and this is actually would be as after the amendment that would be Romanette 2 in the new one. And a service member means an active uniform member of the different armed services areas there. And it also goes on to say that this subsection who has been transferred or is scheduled to be transferred to Wyoming. So that means the member is, you know, like stationed out at the local military base here, and or is scheduled to be stationed here, and is domiciled in Wyoming. So that means that the military spouse is living in Wyoming or has moved to Wyoming on a permanent change of station basis. So essentially they are Wyoming residents. The military spouse would be a Wyoming resident because of they're either domiciled here or they're actually living here. Now, of course, yeah, if you're domiciled here, you know, and your spouse that's an active duty member could be stationed someplace else, but the spouse is domiciled here. So they are indeed, for all practical purposes, a resident of Wyoming. So the residency issue doesn't really apply in that circumstance.
Senator Burns.
Mr. Chairman, that's the part of the bill I missed. And with that, my apologies, and I think it's a good bill.
Okay. Any other questions?
Never mind.
Do I hear a call for the question?
Question.
Question being called silently.
Yeah.
All in favor of Senator Meyer's motion that committee, when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation for Senate File 54 as amended, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 54 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Our next bill, our Senate File 60. Would the reading clerk please read the file?
Senate File 60. Antelope Hunt's Complementary Licenses, an act relating to game and fish, sponsored by Senator Anderson, was referred to Committee Number 6, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Anselmi Dalton, Barnard, Boner, Emmerich, and Moniz. Senator Emmerich, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the file. Senator Emmerich. I'll get you, Fred, here just a second.
I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report that it do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 60, Antelope Hunt's Complementary Licenses. And for the explanation of this bill, I will hand it over to Senator Anderson. But first, Mr. Chairman, there is a standing committee amendment. I'd ask that that be read in at this time.
Okay, thank you.
Senate File 60, Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, page 1, above line 1.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And with that, I'll turn everything over to Senator Anderson. I will move that amendment first and then turn over to Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Senator Emmerich. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The bill before you, Senate File 60, is for antelope one-shot antelope hunts in Wyoming, was handed out earlier, this paper that tells a lot about it that you probably have in your in-basket. A lot of information on that about the women's one-shot antelope hunt. The reason for this bill is the women's one-shot antelope hunt started up 5 years ago in UCROSS, and they had plenty of licenses available. The Game and Fish had told them there was plenty of licenses available in those four or five hunt areas that they're going to cover. The group has done that for the last 5 years on private land in the Sheridan-Johnson County area, and there's been no problem. This year they had 45 women shooting, and it was close to being they were close to being out of licenses. The licenses are all paid for by the hunters, just like the one-shot. They pay for all their licenses also. So there is no game and fish donation on these one-shot hunts. So the women saw that they could possibly be a larger organization. They expect to grow by
5 to 10 a year, so they'd be well over 50 in a couple of years, and so they wanted licenses set aside. The Game and Fish has agreed to set aside 80 antelope permits in both areas. The Lander one-shot hunt is on public land. The women's one-shot in U-Cross is on private land. They've said they put 80 extra there. There's no licenses being taken away from the regular applicants. They do not have to delve into their licenses. So the 80 would be for both hunts. So the bill is for 160 antelope licenses each year for the exclusive use, not more than two antelope hunts, provided it's only 80 per hunt. Now, the ladies' hunt probably needs 80. The men's does not use that many, and they've been in existence for a long time. But the women's hunt probably will reach that at some point in the near future. So with that, I'd like to move the standing committee amendment. Or we have moved that, haven't we? And, yes, I'd like to vote on that. We changed the catch title in that from complementary, since it is not complementary licenses. It is under the complementary area in the statutes, but for this catch title, we'd like to change it to men's and women's. Yeah, antelope hunts, men's and women's. And then the other part of that makes effective immediately upon completion of all acts necessary, et cetera, et cetera.
Any discussion on the amendment? Senator Anselmi.
Mr. Chairman, it was the amendment that our committee proposed under Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, but we would like to, I'm not sure how I say this, I guess we'd like to delete that amendment and go with the amendment in, okay, sorry. Okay, so I would just ask
that we're on Senator.
I would like to ask that
amendment number one.
Okay, on that we'd like to ask it to be stricken.
Well, can we need to vote on that amendment first. There are two committee of the whole amendments that follow this. If you'd like to speak to those.
Okay.
Sorry. Back on standing committee amendment number one. Any further discussion, Senator Emmerich?
The Standing Committee Amendment was pulled out of the committee, of course, and upon more thought, we came up with a following amendment. So I would please ask that this be passed. At that point, we will go to Standing Committee, or to Committee of the Whole, Amendment Number 2, which will rectify the situation.
Any further questions on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1? Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I'm wondering about that. If you have two amendments on the same topic and the same day, and if the Standing Committee particularly wants to preserve the immediate effective date, I would suggest that maybe a divided amendment would be in order and a request from the chairman to vote no on the appropriate division, and I think that would then clear the way for the second amendment, so we wouldn't be adopting two of them on the same day. So, Mr. Chairman, with that, if we could divide the standing committee amendments and the first division be lines 1 through 4 in the amendment, which I understand it would be the committee's preference we vote no on, and then the second division would be lines 5 through 10 on the amendment relating to the effective date, which I think the Standing Committee still does want, does it not? So, Mr. Chairman, if we could proceed that way.
Okay. We're going to call line 1 through 4, division 1, and 5 through 10, division 2. We will be voting on division 1. Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, on Division 1, I'd like to have the body vote that down so we can go to the other one.
Vote no.
Vote no.
Oh, no. Question being called on Division 1. All in favor of Division 1 signify by saying aye.
Pretty persuasive.
All those against signify by saying no.
No!
Division 1 has failed. On to Division 2. Okay. Senator Burns.
Thank you. I'm just curious, if this hunt is until October and Game and Fish knows they're going to be giving the licenses over, I'm trying to understand why it has to be effective immediately rather than July 1st.
I can answer that. Senator Ellis.
Just address the previous question we heard. We that are supporting this bill had visited with Game and Fish, and because of their schedule and their timing of when they review their antelope tags, they thought that this would be actually the most appropriate effective date, and so it was within consultation with the Game and Fish Department. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions on Division 2? Seeing none, question being called. On Division 2, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Division 2 is passed. Any further discussion on the bill, Senator Anderson, or would you like to go to Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, which is sponsored by Ellis? Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, I'd move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to...
Well, of course I do.
Let the clerk read in Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 60.
Senate File 60, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, page 1, above line 1.
And Senator Anderson, that is, to my paperwork says, Senator Ellis is the sponsor of this Committee of the Whole Amendment.
It doesn't matter.
Okay.
Senator Ellis.
Anybody can move it.
You're on.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to move standing or Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 60.
Would the reading clerk read the amendment? We did read it. I'm losing track myself here.
Do we need a second?
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 60 has been moved. Go ahead.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I think that we wanted to make sure that we were getting the title right. If you look at the statute, included in the statute also lists instances where the Game and Fish issues complementary funds, but we thought that this might add confusion in insinuating that the funds, or that, the licenses that would be issued under this particular bill would be complementary when they're in fact not. So I'd ask your favorable support of this amendment.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, I don't have any problems with this amendment, but I think we need to be very clear on what we're doing. This merely changes the catch title, which is an item of convenience as to how we refer to things. The title, which is constitutionally required, is lines 1 through 4 in this bill. And it starts a bill for an act relating to, and that is what really counts. This has no significance other than it makes it easier to refer to it and keeps the level of confusion down a bit.
Any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Ellis's motion, Standing Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to Senate File 60, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. We have Standing Committee Amendment Number 2. Senator, I mean.
Point of order,
yes.
I believe you may have referred to that as Standing
Committee
Amendment. I did.
It is. You're correct, Sandra. Could we have Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 60, read in, please.
Senate File 60, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, page 1, line 15.
Senator Hicks.
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, Mr. Chairman, I move Committee of the Whole Amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 to Senate File 60. Boy, I didn't think I was ever going to get that one out. Chairman, what I'd like to do with this amendment right off the bat is divide it, because there's two public policy issues that I want to address with this that are separate issues with this amendment. So the first division would be lines 1 through 7. The second division is going to be lines 8 through 9.
Which division would you prefer to speak to first?
Mr. Chairman, I'd like to speak to division 1 first. So, members of the body, here's the public policy issue.
Yes.
Yep.
Whether or not that's divisible prior to speaking on the division,
Mr. Chairman.
The chair rules that the division is, it is divisible.
Thank you.
Go ahead.
Mr. Chairman, back on division one. So, what we have is a public policy issue, and I want to bring this to the body's attention. And it was alluded to already that the one hunt that we deal with, the women's hunt, has been very successful. So the public policy issue that you're going to have to grapple with is it's going to get more successful and more successful. And at what point do you say we are going to limit those number of complimentary licenses that don't have to participate in that public drawing pool? And I think it's a question that we need to discuss. Vote this up, vote it down, but the point that I'm trying to get to, at some point we're going to have to set a policy that you just can't, as every group comes in, because what we're seeing now, if you go in there, that we do buck skinners, they get a certain percentage of permits, we do commissioner's permits, we do permits for youth hunts and handicapped hunts and veterans hunts, and at some point in time, there is a limitation on how far we can go here. The number I've proposed, I think, still allows a little bit of expansion for the women's group. I'll address it a little bit more with the one-shot hunt. Currently, they are and they are not currently using all these for the hunts. But I just bring that to your attention as a public policy issue. How far are you going to continue? So what happens next year or 2 years from now that we have 100 women and 100 people want to participate in each one of these? Do we give away 200 and take those out of the public drawing pool? So vote it up, vote it down, but I just wanted to bring your attention. This is not, it's a finite resource. And in many areas of the state, it's a highly sought after and coveted resource. And you're just awarding these to different organizations, and then and ultimately they do come out of the access to the public draw. It's a little bit different with the women's because that's primarily private land over there. But when we get to the one-shot group, there's a lot of public land around in Fremont County that they're hunting in. But so, Mr. Chairman, just wanted to bring that to your attention, and I'd ask for a question on Division One.
Yes. Senator Anderson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I stand not for this amendment. Number one, to Committee of the Whole, number two on 60. The problem we're having is the women's group is increasing rapidly, and if we cut it back to 50, we all of a sudden stop it at about next year with growth. 80 gives them a few years, and the concern that how large is it going to grow? It's going to grow to 80. That's the number that's been in this. In fact, I would look back, it was since 1940, the one-shot has been at 80 permits. So I don't think it's without reason that the women could be 80 going into the future also. So please vote against division number one.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Christensen, go ahead.
I'd give up my turn to the senior senator. Mr. Chairman, on and against Division One, as was stated, this is only the We've only completed 4 years. We're in the fifth year on this hunt, and they're already at 45. And so to limit it at 50, I think you've just put a cap on it right at the beginning. There's another hunt out there that has 80 licenses, and I think they're only using 24 of those for new hunters, if I understand it right. And so if the good chairman from down south would like to do that, maybe he ought to go after that hunt, but let this one continue to grow.
Senator Rothfuss, you're done.
Thank you.
Senator Scott.
Mr. Chairman, the question I would have is in the particular area where these hunts occur, if somebody comes along, some resident comes along and applies for an antelope permit in that area, do they have surplus permits? If you apply for one, do you automatically get one? Or if you don't, what are the odds in the draw?
Senator Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. On and opposed to the division. I can't totally answer it, but I've been to the hunt, and I can tell you most of the residents are at it. It's primarily deeded ground that this part of the hunt happens on. So my guess is there's not a whole lot of residents that even have a chance to get shut out. I'd also like to comment that these hunts seem like they might compete in certain areas. We do this in other areas to do it, and this hunt and several other hunts like it generate more hunters and more interest in hunting, which is the Game and Fish spends piles to try to generate youth and women in particular, but also men hunters. And, you know, one of their problems now is hunter recruitment to get enough to come to all these areas. And these hunts do that in spades. I'd encourage us to vote for this and do it and vote against the amendment and support the hunt.
Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Good answer to. I'm trying at least a partial answer to my tall colleague from Natrona County. A lot of times, not always, but the time you go back and look in those, if you go back and look in the orders that come out of the Game and Fish Department, and when you get in these areas that have high concentrations of private land, a lot of times there's a warning in there that recognizing, warning people that most of these, that in these drawings, that they're on private land. And so in an area that I'm blessed to have an acquaintance who lets me come out and hunt on his private property, in that area there are always, they never draw out all those licenses because so few, there's so little public land there that not very many people go out there. And in fact, it's interesting, he sits out there with a telescope and binoculars and catches anybody who trespasses and then calls the Game and Fish and results in all the nastiness that goes along with that. But generally, just to back up, I think what my good friend from the Devil's Tower said is that very rarely when there's this high concentration of private land do you end up really, usually there's leftover permits every year.
Sandra and Selmy.
Chairman, thank you. Against the amendment, on and against the amendment. These licenses, these 80 licenses are, first of all, above and beyond the quota. The quota is always issued. These are above and beyond it. And they say that there's approximately 5,000 licenses are offered in that area. And so the 80 is only 1.6% in addition. And it's going to be on private land as well. So we argue that we'd like to be able to have more hunters come in, have the women be able to expand this event and bring a little bit of extra cash into Wyoming as well.
Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, and again, I brought this out there for a debate, but there's also been some misinformation presented out here. So I want you to go to the amendment. And the idea that this is targeting the women's hunt doesn't. To my good friend from Teton County, if you read the amendment, it reduces the 80 permits to the one-shot group also. We're all about equality in the state of Wyoming, and we're going to continue to be about equality in the state of Wyoming. No. Back to the long, lanky senator here to my left. some of the discussions right. We've got two issues here. We've got the one shot and we got the women's. And the discussion regarding the availability of permits for the women's hunt, because it's in eastern Wyoming, probably private land, leftover permits is not an issue. That's not the same with the one shot hunt. This is out of Lander, Wyoming, predominantly public land. This reduces the number of permits for those also. So I did, because I was assuming that somebody like my esteemed colleague to the left would ask that question. So what is the chance of somebody drawing a permit in that area? Well, if you take the five areas that those permits are eligible for, your constituents, yours and mine, those youth hunters that we're worried about that apply for those areas every year have a 21% chance of drawing. 80% of them aren't going to get a go hunting. That's the statistics. That's what they are. Vote it up, vote it down, and then let's have a little more robust discussion on Division Two. Thanks, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Case.
Mr. Chairman, thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, there's a particular hunt. I don't think we should be using proper names of hunts. That would go with our convention. But the particular hunt that's very well-known, established hunt and based out of my community. In fact, my father was one of the very early founders, and he actually had the earliest kill, Mr. Chairman, on record for decades. But anyway, Mr. Chairman, it's been 80 for a very long time, and they actually, I'm not part of the hunt, but I believe that they actually use more than 24 licenses, because 24 is the team number, but they also, it's quite a big event, and the past shooters come back, and they also qualify for these licenses, I believe. I'm going to check on that further, but that's what I believe. So there's the team hunts, which are made up of teams of three persons, and then there's also the past shooters. And it's quite a big deal. I mean, it's a real rodeo in our place. It's like the frontier days of Lander, Wyoming, if you want to know. But I have never, ever heard anyone complain, local hunters, and I service them in my establishment, that this interferes with their availability to get a license. And so, Mr. Chairman, it's actually kind of a very concentrated hunt that takes place in just a fairly short amount of time. The people aren't there very long, and I've never heard of any interference with hunting, both experience or the ability to get a license. Thank you. I would vote against the amendment.
Any other questions? Question being called on Division 1 of Committee of the Whole Number 2 on Senate File 60. Please signify by saying aye. Those opposed, no.
No.
Division 1 of Committee of the Whole Number 2 on Senate File 60 has failed. We are now on Division 2. Senator Hicks.
Mr. Chairman, so let's talk about the second policy implication here, and I first let me say these are great things and they're good for the community. Certainly we don't want to discourage these, but here's the issue, and I think the good senator from Lander just talked about it. So I want to read to you, he's right, within this particular hunt, there's eight teams, three members apiece. That's a team that uses 24 licenses. So the second part of this amendment reads, and for use in that hunt only. But here's my concern as it deals with this. So this is what happens. You've got 24 licenses issued to those teams. These are actually the teams that participate in the hunt itself. So what happens to the other 56 licenses? Well, let me read to you what it says. It says, licenses not needed by the one-shot antelope team members, which is an excellent hunt, that's the 24 permits, are made available to past shooters and their guests. And to me, this is a policy issue. If we want to do this, this is fine. If it's grandfathered in and we want to continue that tradition, that's fine. But I'm just telling you, the chance of somebody drawing one of those 56 permits right now is about 20% chance. And when we look at what this hunt does, it isn't a hunt that provides an opportunity for everybody. It's a celebrity hunt. We bring in astronauts and generals and all kinds of celebrities and stuff. That's a good thing for the community, and it's a good thing for the state of Wyoming. I just wonder at what point in time giving licenses that are overprescribed by the public to another entity to hand out to whoever they want to, just because they participated in the past or they're a guest of somebody that participated in the past, I start to worry about the implications that saying, look, let's just take these licenses and hand them out to some other organization and you pick your friends that showed up last year and participated. Oh, and they're guests, too.
Who told you I had friends?
Well, I never made that assumption. Anyway, so that's the issue that we get to. And so that specific language in there would this would address both hunts. My concern is because the way it's worded now, this very same thing could happen with the women's hunt. That if they don't use those 80 permits, they can say, well, you know, if it's good for the good old boys, it's good for the good old girls, and we're going to start handing these out to people that participated in the past and their guests. And all of a sudden, it's no longer about the hunt and getting people to hunt and about the community. It's about the good old boy system. And I worry about that. So the second line in there would just limit both organizations to those that are actually going to participate. So let's say, what effect is that going to have on the event and lander? It would still allow them to double the number of hunters that participate if they wanted to. They could increase the number of teams and still use the 80 licenses. It just gets away from the issue of having a private organization take something that is overprescribed by your constituents and saying, we get to choose who we want to hand those out to. Vote it up, vote it down.
Discussion, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, on and opposed to Division 2 of Committee of the Whole, Number 2, Senate File 60. This is a 76-year-old tradition. This started in 1940, and I had a reliable source look that up. Started in 1940. I don't know that it's ever been changed from that 80 number, but obviously the organization has used that to bring more tourism into Wyoming. If they are only using 24 licenses, then that means they're giving out quite a few to people that are also coming and staying in Lander. I oppose this division because it changes a long-held tradition in Wyoming, and I think it's working just fine.
Question. Senator Case.
Well, Mr. Chairman, this really isn't my backyard, you know. Mr. Chairman, this experience is extremely important to my community. And it's extremely important to people all over Wyoming and around the world that participate in the hunt. And I'm really delighted with this bill. I'm very happy with this bill because, as you know, the Hunt and Lander, it's been criticized at times because of its male hunters. And, you know, I think that's a legitimate criticism. I'm so delighted that this bill has come forward. I think it's a great chance to take kind of the, perhaps a similar concept, Mr. Chairman, and extend it to a new group of hunters, women hunters, and I just think it's fabulous. And I support it wholeheartedly. But if this were to come through as an amendment, I think you'd really find some people very disappointed with this bill. And I don't want that to taint this bill. This bill deserves to go forward. It's the right thing to do. And this amendment would change it completely. And my understanding now, I heard this, it's subject to check, of course. There are over 50,000 antelope licenses. Is that correct? I heard 50,000. 52,000, Mr. You know, that's a lot of antelope. You know, and I drove home this weekend, and it is so beautiful to see those pronghorn out there. You know, they're all bunched up right now. Giant herds of antelope in the area where the hunt around Lander is. I went through it on the way home. We got out early enough on Friday. Fabulous, beautiful. And, you know, I've never heard someone complain that the long-standing, world-class sporting event that takes place in my hometown of Lander, Wyoming, has ever affected anyone's ability to have a hunting experience. This is a Wyoming tradition, and I hope that we will maintain it. It is very important to have the rest of the licenses go to be available for the hunt purposes. And I think, you know, you could quibble about this language, for use for only in that hunt. Well, the whole hunt experience is more than the 2014 or the 2014 members. I urge you and ask you to vote against this.
Question being called. We're voting on Division 2 of the Committee of the Whole Number 2 for Senate File 60. All those in favor of the Division 2 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All those opposed signify by saying no.
No.
Division 2 of Committee of the Whole Number 2 of Senate File 60 has failed. I believe we're back on the bill.
Question on the bill.
All those in favor of Chairman Emmerich's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it do so with a federal recommendation of Senate File 60 as amended, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 60 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next file for consideration is Senate File 11. Clerk will read it.
Senate File 11, License Revocation Process, an act relating to license revocations, sponsored by the Revenue Committee, was referred to Committee Number 3, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Ellis, Kinski, and Peterson. Excused, Senator Wasserberger. Conflict, Senator Case. Senator Peterson, Chairman.
We've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Peterson?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a due pass on Senate File 11, License Revocation Process. And I'll go ahead and explain a little further about this bill. This was some of the work by the Joint Revenue Interim Committee, and this is, I hope, the last bill that you will see this session concerning the cleanup of these hearings and this process, these appeals. We're doing the same thing that we did in past bills this session with the effort of moving it from the Office of Administrative Hearings, the OH or OAH, to the Board of Equalization. So this bill of Senate File 11 looks at revising the process for liquor licenses, suspensions, and revocations, as well as revising sales tax license revocations, and the last thing is installing the State Board of Equalization as the tribunal. And that's basically what this bill does, and I'll walk through it with you. The first section, 12-7201 at the bottom of page 1, this is talking about the proceedings. And as we go to page 2, you see where we strike out the Office of Administrative Hearings. Starting on line 10 is the process where we start to include the Board of Equalization and the actual process. And in that process, we took, for example, on line 11, issuing at least two written notices of the intent of the revoke or suspend the license. We also spelled out the notices shall be provided at least 1 week apart, with a final notice being provided at least 30 days prior to any suspension or revocation. And that notice shall identify the violation warranting the revocation or suspension. Of course, we talked about the ability to appeal. And then on line 1 on page 3, we talk about the State Board of Equalization as the new tribunal. And I might add here, Mr. Chairman, the question was asked in committee how many of these appeals have happened in the last 5 years, and I think there's been only one. So this isn't a big problem, but in that one appeal, both all the parties that participated in that appeal said it could have been handled somewhat better. If the appellant, I'm sure, felt somewhat not slighted, but it was somewhat unfair having the department be prosecuting attorney and judge as well. So we're trying to better define and provide some type of a wall and basically installing the Board of Equalization to be the tribunal. Going on page 3, we talk about the state board in their role on line 7, talking about either affirming or denying the action taken by the division. At that time, the state board may order immediate suspension of a license or permit if the division demonstrates that the licensee should not be permitted to operate pending the outcome of the appeal made under this subsection. The rest is a lot of cleanup, different wording, talking about the state board rather than the division. Suspension on line 17, the permit on line 18, instead of using the term defendant, we use the term licensee. Turning the page, on page 4, section 39-15106, this is where we talk about licenses and permits. On the bottom of page 5, we insert in little g the same wording that was used in the past section. And then 39-15108, we talk about the enforcement and using a lot of the same wording as well. So basically, it's the same effort going from the appeal hearing of the OEH to State Board of Equalization. And that is the bill in its entirety, and I'd stand for question.
Are there any questions? Senator Rothfuss.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, a question for the sponsors. As I understand it from the hearings process, this is an insertion of the Board of Equalization into the current process. So the Tier 1 adjudication, so to speak, would be the Board of Equalization. But then since the language is restored on page 3, Administrative Procedures Act, it says appeals before the State Board, or maybe that's not the State Board. It is. It's the State Board. So I've actually answered my own question. I withdraw that, Mr. Chairman.
Party floor leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to hear a little bit more about the lack of independence. I mean, ultimately what you have, this is pretty normal stuff for an administrative procedure when you're appealing the ruling of any particular agency, is you go through and you go back to this hearing and you go back to the Office of Administrative Hearings, which is not a part of this division. The Office of Administrative Hearings is a separate agency that is independent in its own right, is not beholden to, there is no ramification to them if they rule against the state agency. And so they go through that independent judicial, that basically it is an independent judicial review by the administrative hearing officer, who then recommends those findings back to the division. And that's a normal thing. Ultimately, it's a remand, and ultimately that remand goes back to them, but basically with those are the findings. The head of the agency can't undo the findings of the administrative hearing officer. And so I guess I'd like to hear a little bit more about why the independence of the Office of Administrative Hearings is insufficient in this instance, where it is obviously sufficient in workers' compensation hearings and driver's license hearings and all the other places where there are significant property rights at issue. But in this instance, it's not appropriate. I'd like to hear a bit more about that.
Senator Peterson? Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I know what we see from the stricken language there, but the testimony in the committee was that the hearing is held before the director of the Department of Revenue, and that that is the part where they've kind of tried to have a Chinese wall within the agency, but clearly the prosecutor and the judge were from the same agency. And I know it does say on line 7 where it says Wyoming Administrative Procedure Act before a hearing examiner of that office, but that's not what was happening. So I need to do a little bit more checking on that, and we can get back to you. But the reason this is being brought is to give it independence that it doesn't have currently.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I wanted to address the question raised by my colleague from Natrona County. That very issue came up, and we asked kind of the question, and I think the analogy that we got was, you know, we have a U.S. district court, but a bankruptcy court that specializes in it, in bankruptcy law. And from what my takeaway from listening to the committee discussion was that OAH would be a proper reviewing tribunal, but that the BOE, because they work in taxes extensively, have a little bit more expertise in that area. And my understanding was that OAH was comfortable with BOE being the reviewing body. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion? Is there a call for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Senator Peterson's motion that when the Committee of the Whole arises to report it, do so with a favorable recommendation of Senate File 11, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senate File 11 has passed Committee of the Whole. Our next file is Senate File 14. The reading clerk will read the bill.
Senate File 14, Inoperative Liquor Licenses, an Act Relating to Alcoholic Beverages, sponsored by the Corporations Committee, was referred to Committee Number 7, which returned a committee recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Agar, Nethercott, Pappas, and Scott. Conflicts, Senator Case. Senator Case, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report that it do so with a do pass recommendation on Senate File 14, Inoperative Liquor Licenses. Mr. Chairman, this is a pretty easy bill to follow. What it basically does is to take, and it deals with the issue of what's called parked liquor licenses, Mr. Chairman. This was something we might have discussed a little bit this morning on our other bill related to liquor licenses, but it's a situation where someone has a liquor license, but it's not currently being used to sell liquor. So, Mr. Chairman, the current status of the law is that you're allowed to do that for 2 years. And that after that you're allowed to go back to the licensing authority and get an extension. So this basically, all this bill does is take the 2 years and take it down to 1 year and puts a little bit more, framework to it. So if you'll bear with me and go to page 2, you'll see at the top of the page is the definition of operational. And you can see that before, operational had meant that they were operating for not less than 3 consecutive months during any calendar year. So that would allow someone to kind of hang out a shingle that says Joe's Liquor Store and operate for 3 months in a row. This bill changes that and says, no, you have to be open for 12 consecutive months unless you're determined to be a seasonal operation. We do have those operations in Wyoming. It might be a marina, different aspects of seasonal operation. But it's the local licensing authority that actually determines that you are a seasonal operation. So if you continue through the bill, you can see in the rest under 12.4.103, Romanet 4, where the 2 years is changed to 1 year, as I mentioned earlier. But it's also important to go to the page 3 at the end of that same section. And that section used to end with, any license or permit in violation of this paragraph shall not be renewed by the local licensing authority. We did put in an exception here, Mr. Chairman, and said, and once the enterprise is operational or open for business, no licensee shall be eligible to repeat the grace periods, which is the additional year that can be granted, made available by this paragraph without the consent of the local licensing authority due to extraordinary circumstances. And that was some work of the committee. Kind of prevents you from not operating a license, getting it back into operation sort of in a temporary basis, and then dropping back out repeatedly. And that was the purpose of that. Mr. Chairman, I have a couple of handouts, and they're somewhat actually mixed up the numbering on the handouts. But you can see I have, they're both from the Wyoming Liquor Division, and one of them says Senate File 14, one of them says Senate File 45, which was a bill we discussed this morning. But honestly, Mr. Chairman, they're relevant to this bill. Both handouts are, and probably the one that's mislabeled Senate File 45 is more pertinent to this bill. You will see that it has the population formulas that we discussed this morning in the first column, and then it has the number of retail licenses authorized, and then the retail licenses issued, And then it has retail licenses available. And then this is an important one, retail licenses non-operational. And you can go to your favorite county, you can go to your favorite town, and you can find out where licenses have been issued but are not operational at this time. And this is just with respect to retail liquor licenses, Mr. Chairman. And if you'll indulge me, the other chart that I handed out is much more detailed, and it talks about all the different types of licenses, and you can see there how many are available in each category and how many have been issued, et cetera, et cetera. But the one that actually talks about the operational aspect was the first chart. Mr. Chairman, I do have a conflict on this bill. Too much liquor in my world. So, Mr. Chairman, I'd be happy to answer any questions, though.
Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm just curious about on 12.4.103 on A little Romanet 4, the 1 year where you knocked it down to 1 year, but yet you say that will be operational and planned but not physically functional building within 1 year after license permit has been issued or transferred. So was there any discussion, I'm curious, in committee about somebody getting the license before the bank would loan them the money, so then they start the building, and then it takes a couple of years to build the building. And so, but you've kept them down to 1 year. They have to be operating within 1 year and 12 months straight after that point of operation. So was there any discussion in there?
Senator Case?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, not specifically. That did kind of come up in the interim, but not during this fall. So, yes, indeed, I think you've got the key to this section is the first part is somebody that might be planning an operational an operation, hasn't got it up and running yet. And you can see that the language in the first part parallels the language in the second part is that someone doesn't open their business. So the first part is about someone that is planning a business and doesn't get it done. The second part is about someone that just fails to open it. So, Mr. Chairman, remember it's right now you can do 1 year, and then you can get an extension for another year. And if you stumble in getting it, you actually don't get it in an exceptional circumstance, you can go to your local licensing authority and get a further extension. So in the case of where your financing falls through or whatever, it's up to the local licensing authority. But I would think that you'd have a pretty good chance of showing them that it's exceptional circumstance. But your local people are the ones that are going to know. The question is, can you develop and get a building done within the 1 year plus one, or would you need 2 years plus one? I think the 1 year plus one ought to be enough time. I really do, if it's a real license. Remember, there are other people that want to – supposedly the reason we're doing this is to make the licenses available for other folks, to get them out of the hands of people that aren't using them and putting them to use, to get at the problems there where licenses aren't being operated.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I've got a question. A couple of them. Up in the under the definition on page 2 up there, as I read that, I'm trying to work through how that works. And so we're talking about that operational means offering for sale alcoholic liquor and malt beverages authorized under the permit for not less than 12 consecutive months or not less than 3 consecutive months during any calendar year if determined that it's in the instance of the three month that it's operational. So before, if I understand that right, so question one is, if I understand that right, that basically it would be 11, if you're a full-time place, it would be 11, it would be, you have to have not sold anything for 12 months. So it's a year before you can start this process if it was a non-seasonal establishment. That's, Mr. Chairman, that's kind of question one. I want to see if that's right, because maybe the timeline works out okay. Because if that's the case, then ultimately the time frame isn't that much difference once the operations have discontinued, if I'm reading that right. So you'd have to be non-operational for a year, then it's another year for your permit after it's been transferred, or it's another year while you're waiting. And then if there's still another problem, you can apply for one additional year for good cause. And so in the end, as I read that, it looks to me like before it was 3 years, and now it's still kind of 3 years. It's just that the operational issue is a little bit different. Am I reading that correctly?
Senator Case?
Mr. Chairman, I thought I had it until he confused me a little bit there, Mr. Chairman. But so operational means you're open for 12 months, or in the case that you're deemed a seasonal operation, that has to be three continuing months. That's your marinas and things like that, Mr. Chairman. So under Part 2, it says any licensee who fails to demonstrate that his license will be operational and planned, or if you go on and down, fails to open his business in a functional building after license issuance or transfer. So I think, Mr. Chairman, it really does take it down to two, if you think about it. Because you got 1 year where you don't get it done, then you're deemed non-operational, then you have a year to it's kind of the grace period that you would have. So I think the 1 year after the permit, if you're not operational, that starts the clock right there. So it's really 1 year plus another year plus going back for an exception, good cause, possibly for another extension. But it's an automatic extension of 1 year, and then it comes on the 1 year that involves the operation. So I think it does take it down from three to two, practically, unless you go for the exceptional circumstance situation. So that's an improvement in the law to go from three to two, and that's the effect of this bill.
Senator Driscoll.
I'd like to request a Rules Committee meeting on adjournment on conflicts on liquor licenses. We've got four of us that got them. We keep, or maybe more out there. I personally not sure there's conflict here, but I'd sure like for Rules to tell me on adjournment if they think this is a conflict or not. I'm uncomfortable. I'll put it that way. Thank you.
Mr. Vice President.
Mr. Chair, actually, we need to convene. If you call them for the rules, we probably need to convene it at this moment because you're about to vote on something that you're nervous about. So we should actually call in for the Rules Committee. So we'll stand at ease until sound of the gavel.
We're going to stand at ease until the motion of the gavel.
I don't think the gavel can make a motion, Mr. Chairman.
How about the sound of the gavel? Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole beg leave to rise and sit again. You've heard the motion?
Oh, yes, yes. You've heard the motion. All in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
What is going on?
We get, we have to announce the Rules Committee, really, and then we'll go back. Yeah. Mr. Vice President, my mic's still on.
Oh, we got it. Thank you. So we had a meeting of the Rules Committee, and the Rules Committee ruling is that, and it was a motion by Senator Office, that there is those that inquired do not have a conflict. This would be pursuant to our new rule, 12-2, that their duties as they are members of a substantive class, their benefits would be no different than the benefits received by others in that class. And then, furthermore, any benefits they may receive are speculative and remote. And at this, and one of the other findings we did realize was that none of them hold an inoperative liquor license, which is really the gist of this bill. So, absent any objections, this becomes the rule of the body pursuant to our new rule 12-2. So, hearing no objection, that is the ruling of the committee. Thank you. Yes, Senator Case, since I find you.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. I have the privilege of the floor.
Yeah.
I didn't ask for the ruling, and I will continue to have a conflict on the bill. And the reason, there was an Attorney General's opinion that indicated that the appearance of conflict is really a very important aspect. And this predated the Ethics Act. And really, if you look at what applies to legislators, and I'm not disagreeing with the Rule Committee at all. I absolutely agree with it 100%. But as my position as chairman of the Corporations Committee, I think I have a higher perception of appearance of conflict if I vote and shelter liquor bills through. So for that reason, I'm very comfortable that my fellow senators have this ruling in their favor, and I'm glad to see it. But I need to continue to do this, and I think it satisfies all the real issues, and I hope that's okay with everybody. Thank you, Mr. Vice President.
Thank you, Senator Case. I will tell you that the vote was 4-0 with one absent, so it was unanimous of the ruling committee. And with that, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you. Mr. Vice President, and I move that the Committee of the Whole, that the Senate resolve itself back into Committee of the Whole.
You've all heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Senator Moniz.
The Committee of the Whole will come back in order. I believe that's what I was going to say. Are there any further discussion on Senate File 14? Seeing none, question being called. All those in favor of Senator Case's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that do so with a favorable recommendation on Senate File 14, please say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Senate File 14 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that's all I have here. Mr. Majority Floor Leader. We're out of bills here.
Oh, that was the last one. That was 14. Thank you. Mr. Chairman, excuse me for being in for a moment of inattentiveness. Mr. Chairman, I move that the Committee of the Whole rise and report.
Thanks for all. You've heard the motion. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carries.
Thank you. No, I think we're good. We're missing the Vice President. Well, let's see. Senator Case. No, why don't you go up there for a minute?
Well, actually, why don't we have Senator Scott do it? He's the most senior of us all. Hank, okay.
I think we stand at ease on the sound.
If nobody has authority to do that either. perhaps we could send... could somebody go look for the vice president? He's MIA.
I appreciate what you're saying.
Yeah. No, don't worry. Hey. Mr. Vice President?
Hang on a second, Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
I was just going to fill you in where we were.
Okay, that would be great. Why don't you do that since I'm totally lost?
While you were gone, we changed the rules. No. we've moved through the committee to rise and report, and the chairman called for the vote, and that passed. So we, Mr. Chairman, that's where we are.
Okay. The clerk will read the Committee of the Whole report.
Mr. President, your Committee of the Whole, having had under consideration bills on general file, begs leave to report as follows. Senate File 36, do pass amended. Senate File 45, do pass amended. Senate File 23, do pass. Senate File 54, do pass amended. Senate File 60, do pass amended. Senate File 11, do pass. Senate File 14, do pass. Senator Moniz, Chairman.
Senator Moniz.
Mr. Chairman, I move for the adoption of the Committee of the Whole report.
You've heard the motion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Motion carried and the report has been adopted. We have messages from the House. Will the reading clerk please read those?
From the House of Representatives, January 18, 2017, Mr. President, the House adopted the Committee of the Whole report on the following bill by the vote indicated. Message number 119, House Bill number 31, State Parks Accounts, ayes 22, noes 37, excused 1. The bill has been indefinitely postponed. Signed, Wendy Harding, House Chief Clerk.
We have standing committee reports to read. Reading clerk, please.
January 17, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 8, to whom was referred Senate File 55, Anti-Discrimination Military Spouses, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Agar, Baldwin, Christensen, Meyer. No, Senator Anderson. Senator Meyer, Chairman. January 18, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 10, to whom was referred Senate File 21, death certificates, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Baldwin, Boner, Bouchard, Peterson, and Scott. Senator Scott, Chairman. January 18, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 9, to whom was referred Senate File 92, Local Governments Plan Review Authority, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Senators Anderson, Coe, Perkins, Rothfuss, and Von Flatern. Senator Von Flatern, Chairman. January 18, 2017, Mr. President, your committee number 5, to whom was referred Senate File 4, Water Projects Map and Platting and plat filing requirements, respectfully reports same back to the Senate with a recommendation that it do pass amended. Ayes, Senators Barnard, Emmerich, Hicks, Meyer, and Moniz. Senator Hicks, Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader, that clears the desk. Do you have a motion for me?
Mr. Vice President, I move that we stand adjourned until 10 a.m. Thursday, January 19th.
Is there any announcements? Senator Meyer.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number 8, Transportation, will meet in about 10 minutes in Jonah Room S27 to discuss the following bills.
Senate File 19, snowplow lights. Senate File 38, veteran license plates, stickers repeal. Senate File 64, accident report confidentiality. Senate File 74, vehicle registration, fees, depreciation period.
Senator Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number three, revenue, will meet tomorrow, 30 minutes afternoon recess in General Room S-19, to discuss Senate Joint Resolution 5, countermand amendment, and Senate File 87, countermand amendment provisions.
Senator Emmerich.
Thank you, Mr. Vice President. Your committee number six, travel, recreation, wildlife, and fuzzy creatures, will meet tomorrow at 8 a.m. in General Room S-27 to consider Senate File 86, game and fish permits, Senate File 90, allocation of complementary hunting licenses.
Thank you. Senator Burns.
Mr. Vice President, your committee number two, appropriations, will meet at about 20 minutes at 4:45 in the appropriations room to continue markups. We will also meet at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning for markups. And then tomorrow at lunch, for a little break, at 12:30, we'll meet to mark up. But then we're going to also deal with the state capital construction bill, the abandoned land mines funds, and then five bills dealing with game and fish fees, livestock inspections and investigators, motor vehicles, registration fees, driver's license fees, energy science stipends and fellowships. These are, for the most part, fee bills. We're dealing with the fees on those. And then, tomorrow upon adjournment for more markup.
Senator Office.
Mr. Vice President, point of order.
And what would that be?
Mr. Vice President, pursuant to our last situation where we had a leadership vacuum that left the chamber befuddled, wondering how to proceed, Masons provides in Section 579, Selection of Presiding Officer, Rule Number 2, when the officer whose legal right and duty it is to preside over the meeting is necessarily or willfully absent, or no provision has been made for a presiding officer, the members at the meeting are, of necessity, authorized to elect a temporary presiding officer from their members to conduct the deliberations. We lost our opportunity.
Yes, body. I'm back.
But we know next time how to proceed. Thank you, Mr. President.
And you'll have the
Vice President.
You'll have the President up here, and you certainly can do that. Is there any more announcements for the Senate? You've all heard the motion. Those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
The Senate will stay adjourned. Well, Senator Hastert will stay here all night, but the rest of us, the Senate will be adjourned until 10 a.m. tomorrow, the 19th, I believe.